Okay. Welcome back. A couple of announcements to begin. First, I mentioned last time, I want to give a couple of reminders until we get in the swing of things. Homework one is due a week from today. That's posted online, available on the lecture schedule webpage. It has a couple of problems with the book and then an extra credit problem related to some things we'll talk about today. An addendum, because I was asked after class last time, I suppose I forgot to mention, I have the office hours that I mentioned, but in addition to that, I am willing to meet outside of hours, schedule something via email. That's subject to availability. And if it's an email wanting to meet an hour before the homework is due, that's probably not going to be a safe bet for you to try. You're welcome to try. But you can email me anytime saying, can't make it to office hours or would like to meet it sometime out of that. When are you available? And we can coordinate and find another time to meet. Okay. Okay, so with that, what we're going to do is we're going to move into chapter two, which is discussing behavior of these power converters in equilibrium or steady state. And we'll kind of define that and begin developing some tools to analyze these converters in steady state today. To jump into that, I'm going to maybe a bit more formally review some things that we talked about with the buck converter yesterday. And I want to start by kind of writing and defining some terms that we may have talked about, but that we're going to use throughout the course. So here's our buck converter again. We've got this single pole, dual throw switch. Single pole, dual throw switch here. We add this low pass filter. After it, switch back and forth, filter out all of the high frequency behavior to get some DC output that we can control. So this switching that I mentioned here, where we have a constant period, we spend a variable amount of time in switch position one, and the remainder of the period in switch position two, we call this pulse width modulation. Commonly abbreviated PWM, to saying that I've got a constant period and I'm varying the width of this pulse. That's my control variable. As I change the amount of time in switch position one, that changes the output voltage. The width of that pulse is what I'm regulating. In this, we have some constant switching period, TS. Which is the total time of our one period of our periodic signal here. And the reciprocal of that, FS, which is 1 over TS, is our switching frequency. And then last thing I want to define here, D is my duty cycle. Which is some number between 0 and 1, which describes the percentage of the entire period that I'm in a given interval. Okay. And this buck converter and many of the converters we'll look at, there are just two different subintervals per period. So I can define D as the duty cycle of one. The duty cycle of the other period is then 1 minus D, which would be the remainder of the period. We call that D prime, 1 minus D. D is the amount of time I'm here. D prime is the amount of time I'm here. In general, if I had more switching subintervals, if I had four or five, I could talk about D1, D2, D3, D4. They would all sum to one, but each would describe the percentage of time I'm in each interval. One of the things we are commonly interested in examining in these DC to DC converters, what's known as the conversion ratio, normally denote that M, it's the output voltage divided by the input voltage. So the ratio of these two voltages tells me how much this converter is either increasing or decreasing the output voltage relative to the input. Our conversion ratio. Right. So one of our goals of analysis of any new topology, any new converter, will be to solve what is this conversion ratio for it. What is it capable of doing? So in the buck, we kind of already know from yesterday, this can step down the voltage. V can be anything less than VG. So our conversion ratio is going to be some number less than one. For other topologies, we're able to step up or step up and down. Okay. So our analysis last time was kind of intuitive. Let's talk about this. It kind of makes sense that I generate this square wave and then filter it down. We'll kind of put a bit more formality to that today. Develop tools that can be used on any converter. The buck's kind of a specific case in that the switch and the low-pass filter are just connected purely in series. So I can talk about BS being this type of waveform and then filtering it. So the argument we made last time was that, okay, if I just look at the switch, this is what I get at BS. I can filter this down. The average value is what I'll get at the output. And we solve for what that average value is. So, reminder, average value of VS of T, I'm getting away from my definitions now, average value of VS of T, we have some notation I'm going to introduce here. Is that we write this as angle brackets and then a bar here to denote the period. So these angle brackets are shorthand for an averaging function. And this bar tells me what sort of time I'm averaging over. I'm averaging over one period, TS. More often than not, I will write this as just angle brackets VS, where it's assumed known that we're averaging something which is a function of time, and that if I'm talking about a power converter, I'm probably averaging over the switching period. So this, just further shorthand here, either of these full definition is going to be, this is 1 over TS times the integral from 0 to TS, VS of T DT, which is just a mathematical definition of averaging function over some period. Okay. So when I apply that to this waveform using this mathematical definition, I'm going to get average value of VS is equal to 1 over TS times this integral. If I integrate over this period, what I'm going to get is the area of this thing here, which is a rectangle with sides DTS and VG. So in here I'll have TS times DVG. My TSs will cancel. My average value is equal to DVG. Okay. Then we made this argument. If I have this low pass filter, that should pick off this average value. And I should see that at the output. Maybe a little bit more on that. Why does that work? So if I look at, for example, the spectrum of V of S on a Bode plot type log frequency scale, look at Fourier transform of V of S. What am I going to get with the frequency content of this waveform? Well, what I have is I go through and do Fourier series of this. I have some DC component equal to the average value, and then I'll have frequency components at its switching period, at my switching frequency, FS, and then higher harmonics of it. What I'd see is, I kind of break the axis here since I can't put DC on a log scale. Somewhere back here at zero frequency, I'd have this average value. So some component there in my frequency spectrum. And then out here, I'd have FS, 3FS, 5FS, all these different harmonics that if I add up certain amplitudes of the sinusoids at all of these, I'll get back the square wave. Okay. So what am I doing with the low-pass filter? This low-pass filter should have a transfer function. Call it H of S. It looks something like, if I put it on the same axes, this, where it has 0 dB gain at low frequencies, and then at some frequency, F naught, I break and have minus 40 dB per decade gain through this low pass filter. Looking familiar to everybody? Good. So if F naught, the corner of this low pass filter, is somewhere well below my first harmonic, then all of these are going to be attenuated. I've got a gain through the low pass filter, which is some negative 40 dB. Down the amplitude of all these harmonics by 100 times or more. But my DC is going to pass right through. I've got a gain of 1 through the low-pass filter back here at DC. Excuse the kind of break in notation here. I want to get DC on this plot. You can't. It's at minus infinity on the log axis, but it's way down there. I broke that axis to get it on the plot. Okay. So for this low-pass filter, if its corner frequency is much less than FS, then I should have significant attenuation of all AC components of VS. I'll knock all these things down by trying to send them through the low pass filter. What I'll get at the output is roughly just the DC component. That make sense? Okay. So, like I said, this buck converter, one of the reasons we start with it is because it's somewhat easy to understand. So I have these nicely separated my switch stage, and I can look at just how it operates, does this thing, and then I can add a low pass filter. I can look at how it operates, it gets rid of all the AC, and understand this converter fully by breaking those two apart. As I get into different topologies, that won't be true anymore. So here are the three most basic DC to DC converters where they have one single pole dual throw switch, one inductor, and one capacitor. Okay. So the topologies, names, and then over here is a plot of this conversion ratio M versus duty cycle. maybe hard to see for each of these plots. This is D and this is M. They write it as M of D to show that this conversion ratio is a function of the duty cycle. Okay. So for the buck converter, V is equal to DVG. So my conversion ratio is D. My voltage can go between 0 and 1. My conversion ratio can go between 0 and 1, so my output voltage can be between 0 and my input. Boost converter is a step-up converter. Got this kind of expression for M. You can see M starts at 1 and then goes up. So my output voltage can be anything greater than my input voltage. And then this last one, the buck boost, it's got different conversion ratio. My value goes between 0 and minus infinity. Because its absolute value is both greater than or less than 1, it can either step up or step down, but it's also inverting. So my output voltage is going to be the opposite polarity of my input. Okay. My buck is my step down. Boost is a step up. Buck boost steps up or down and is inverting. So a quick look at these, we'll kind of go through them in some more detail later, but the point I want to make here is, other than this buck converter, the rest of these a little bit more difficult to analyze. Now, for the boost, I've got the switch somewhere in the middle of my LC filter. That's going to have some different behavior. I'm not going to be able to just divide out the switching part and the filter part. Same thing here. Okay. We won't be able to as easily just intuit the results on these. So what we're going to do then is cover the content of chapter 2, which is really looking at developing the techniques for analyzing any arbitrary converter topology. These three, you said, are kind of the basic ones, where it's just a single pole dual throw switch, one inductor, one capacitor, but they're a very small subset of all the different converter topologies out there. There are many, many more where I have more switches, more inductors, more capacitors, transformers, other things involved. Okay. We're going to develop the techniques to analyze these. What we're going to use are really three principles: inductor volt second balance, capacitor charge balance, and the small ripple approximation, the three tools we talk about. And then in the process, we're going to talk about sizing filter elements and do some basic analysis of some of these converters. Okay. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is this small ripple approximation. So if I look at the buck converter, the kind of conversation we've been having up until now talks about this filter attenuating all AC and me just getting a DC value at the output. Of course, no filter has ideal attenuation, infinite attenuation. So if I look at my actual output voltage in this buck, it's going to be mostly DC, but it'll have some remaining attenuated AC components, right? These have been knocked down a lot because this came from a full square wave. All that AC has been attenuated, but I have some kind of AC components left on this. I'm going to describe this waveform as the DC component plus some ripple. This ripple is multi-frequency. It's FS, 3FS, 5FS, all that stuff. Anything that's not DC is lumped into this term. Okay. Now, I did a good job with that filter. This ripple should be pretty small. If it's too big, I can move the cutoff of the cutoff frequency of the filter down and get more attenuation out of this. And that's, in application, almost certainly a fair assumption to make. because if I'm calling this a DC to DC converter, I'm powering some loads that expect a DC voltage. I better have designed this thing so that that ripple is small. If I have some gigantic ripple on here, I could be damaging my loads. I could be hurting the integrity of sensing circuits powered by this. It depends on the application. And we'll talk about how to go from specs on what's the allowable ripple into the filter design. But exactly what's allowable depends on what you're doing. So if it's a microprocessor, I could have a limitation of 1 millivolt of ripple. If this is powering some actual resistive load for heating or for some other purpose, I may not care if it's 100% ripple, right? It's an LED load, maybe I don't care, depending on the frequency of that, as long as it's up above the frequency or I can see, I might be willing to allow 50% ripple on it. So it depends. In general, if you're powering any kind of analog circuitry, any kind of microelectronics, those things are very sensitive when they expect a DC supply to any ripple on it. If you're powering something passive, something that doesn't have kind of analog or digital electronics in it, maybe you don't care as much. Just to complete the answer, I mean, rough rule of thumb, if you don't have a full spec, is put the cutoff frequency of the filter at least a decade below your switching frequency. Like I said, usually this is going to be derived from some spec on what the output voltage ripple is, then you back calculate what the filter needs to be. Okay. So, assuming we care about this, assuming we're powering some load that needs a DC, I darn well better have designed this thing so that this ripple is very small. And if this ripple is very small, maybe it's significant to the load, but as far as analyzing what's happening during my switching, I can more or less just approximate this output voltage as its DC component. Okay? And that is the small ripple approximation. You're taking from the book. Here they say, in a well-designed converter, the output voltage ripple is small, which means that this is not some arbitrary approximation. You're saying, well, I'm going to design this thing so that this is true. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself and saying I'm going to apply this assumption in my design process. Okay? So if this ripple is much less than the DC value, then I'm adding something big and something really small. I can neglect the small thing and say that my output voltage is approximately just the DC value. I ignore this ripple. Okay. So this is the case for the output capacitor in the buck converter. More generally, we'll apply this in a lot of different cases. And any large filter element. Small ripple approximation may apply. Which means that for big caps, the voltage approximately just its DC component. For big inductors, the current is approximately just its DC component. Okay. But it only applies to these things. Okay. You cannot apply small ripple approximation to the current in a capacitor or the voltage on an inductor, or anything having to do with the resistor or voltage source. Okay. So has to do with the job of these things. These are state elements. Capacitor holds charge, maintains a voltage in the presence of current. We're going to size it as filter elements so that its voltage has small ripple. Inductor is the dual, job is in the presence of voltage to maintain a more or less constant current. So we're going to be able to approximate its current as DC. In many cases, there are a couple cases where we'll have to relax this approximation, and we'll talk about them a little later. Okay. So with this, we're going to be able to greatly simplify exact analysis of this buck converter. So perhaps taking a step back, what is difficult about analyzing these switching converters? Well, if I don't make any approximations such as these and I want to have exact time domain analysis of this thing, what I've got is a LC resonant circuit, which is going to give me some second order differential equation. And then I've got this switching thing. Switching actions are generally nonlinear and time varying, which we hate, right? Electrical engineers, we love LTI systems, linear, time invariant, right? Transfer functions, manipulate them, no problem. This thing's nonlinear and time varying stuff. And then I got a second order differential equation that's now nonlinear that I have to solve. It becomes difficult to do exactly. If I start allowing myself to make these approximations, if I approximate the output voltage as constant, this cap is more like a voltage source. Now my second order differential equation becomes first order differential equation. I can just integrate, easy. And then we'll develop how to do what is essentially an average model of the switch to get rid of the nonlinearity and time-varying nature of it. So the way we're going to approach that is we're going to look at the behavior of this converter in the two switching subintervals independently. So when I put the switch in switch position one, I can reduce this circuit to an equivalent. This is an ideal switch. I shorted through one. It's an open contact at two, and I get this circuit. This is now a simple LTI circuit. It's just a linear circuit. You analyze it the way you've always done, right? Particularly if I apply small ripple approximation, this is a first order linear circuit. Okay. The switch goes into switch position two. What I get is this. The input's effectively disconnected. I've shorted VS down to ground. Same thing. Now a very simple circuit. We can analyze these. What we're going to do is look at the behavior in both of these independently, and then we'll make some arguments about how they combine together to describe the behavior of the converter. Okay. So I'm going to look at behavior in one and two. I'll start with one. I'm going to specifically focus on the next few slides on solving what's happening with the inductor current. Okay. So my circuit for subinterval one. I want to know what's going on with the inductor current. I'm going to use the inductor equation. V is equal to LDI dt. Got VL labeled here with the polarity, IL drawn with the matching polarity. V sub L of t, my voltage on the inductor is L DIL t dt. And based on my circuit, that voltage, do a KVL around the loop here, it's going to be VG minus V of T, where V of T is the voltage between these two nodes, labeled over here by the resistor, but it's the voltage on the capacitor. They're directly in parallel. Okay. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to apply small ripple approximation on this capacitor voltage, assuming that this V of T is some DC plus ripple, and that ripple is small enough that I can neglect it. We'll get now apply my small ripple approximation, V of T. This will become L DIL of T dt is equal to VG minus, now capital V, just the DC component of that output voltage. Okay, last thing I'm going to do, I'm just going to divide the L over DIL DT equal to VG minus V over L. So this circuit, when I'm analyzing the inductor current, what's describing is under the small ripple approximation, I have some constant voltage applied across the inductor. When I apply a constant voltage to an inductor, I get a linearly ramping inductor current. So the slope of the inductor current is constant, equal to VG minus V over L. If I were to plot what the inductor current is doing during this time, it would look like starts at some value. At the moment, I have no idea what this value is, so I'll just call it IL of 0. And then it's going to ramp up some constant slope, VG minus V over L, till the end of the period. It'll be at some value IL of DTS. I know the end of the period is DTS because I'm talking about this first subinterval. And definition of duty cycle is the amount of time we're in this subinterval. Okay. All make sense so far? Okay. So same thing in the second subinterval. Our switch changes position. Now we have a different linear equivalent circuit. This one, voltage on my inductor, LDIL DT is equal to, now, KVL around this loop, all I've done is effectively short out the left-hand side. So what I'm going to get is minus V of T, 0 from the short minus V of T. I'm going to, again, apply my small ripple approximation. What I'll get is L DIL DT is equal to minus V, DC component, or slope of my inductor current is minus V over L. So I plot this one. My inductor current starts somewhere, ramps down, the slope of minus V over L. The total duration of this is now D prime TS. And this one for the remainder of the period. Last one for DTS, this one for D prime TS. Again, don't know yet where this starts, where it ends. I don't know these points, I just know during this time it's sloping down. Okay. So then on the next slide, what I'm going to do is I'm going to combine these two and make some arguments about how we combine them. I'm going to plot two things here, the inductor voltage on the top plot and the inductor current on the bottom plot. Okay. So the inductor voltage we solved in both of these, it was VG minus V in the first subinterval, and then minus V in the second subinterval. This should be VG minus V constant here, and then minus V constant here. Okay. How do I draw this? VG minus V. In general, I don't know where that should be vertically on the spot. Is that positive or negative? You can infer now, you have some early information here, the buck is a step-down converter. The output voltage is always less than the input. So VG minus V is going to be something greater than zero, going to be some positive value. I'm going to draw it somewhere up here. Then when I switch from subinterval 1 into subinterval 2, it goes to minus V. You know, V is greater than zero, so that's going to be some negative value. Inductor current drops down, inductor voltage drops down here. At TS, it's going to repeat. Over one whole period, I have this pulsating voltage waveform on my inductor. Okay. Inductor current then, in both intervals, we solved the slope of it, and it was the inductor voltage divided by L. So arbitrarily picking a point, I'm going to start the inductor current right here. It's going to slope up. VG minus V over L. Here, when the inductor voltage changes, because I switched into switch position 2, it's going to begin sloping down with a slope of minus V over L. Okay. Still, I don't know what IL of 0 is, and therefore also don't know what IL of DTS is, or IL of TS. One thing, given that I don't know any of these values, that I did do is I made the waveform continuous right here. And that, perhaps we didn't know, because we just analyzed these two subintervals independently. So, do we agree? How do we know that it's got to be continuous right there? Or do you disagree? Does it not need to be? Right. All I know is the slopes. So I could have drawn it this here and this thing up here in some discontinuity, right? Is there a reason I didn't do that? Exactly. So, IL of T must be continuous because of the definition of an inductor. The voltage is L times the derivative of the current. I have a step discontinuity, I have a DIDT that goes to infinity, which means I would have had to apply infinite voltage. I don't have any mechanism to do that in this converter or any other. So I know that this has to remain continuous. Okay. Voltage on an inductor, if I have some step discontinuity here, don't care. It's just going to change the slope, so this will remain continuous. Okay. Same thing will apply to voltages on capacitors. Have to be continuous. Okay. Okay. So I drew this in a certain way. I drew it such that IL of 0 and IL of TS are different values. What does that mean about this converter operation? Well, it means that after this, I'm going to go into the next period, right? This whole thing's periodic, just doing the same switching period over and over. So for this period, my initial condition on the inductor current was IL of 0. For the next one, it's going to be this value, which is something different. Okay? What that means is that this converter is not in steady state. Okay? General for a well-designed converter, I turn this thing on. If nothing's changing, it's going to run to a condition where every period's the same. Right? All sort of transients and oscillations die out. This thing reaches steady state equilibrium. And every period from then on will be the exact same thing. Okay. The way I drew it, I'm not in steady state. I'm in some transient. The inductor current is changing. Next period, it'll get a little lower. There'll be some sort of oscillation or exponential type behavior to this. And then eventually, it'll reach some value where for every period, the current at the beginning and the end are the same. And if they are the same, it means the initial conditions for my next period are the same as they were for this period. So the next period is going to look the exact same as this one. And from then on, I'm just going to have repeats of the exact same thing. Okay. So here, IL of 0 not equal to IL of TS. This implies that I'm in a transient. I.e. not in steady state. Okay, so this graphically on the next slide, this is just a depiction of what the inductor current looks like in one design of a buck converter at startup. Right? So everything's off. I suddenly turn it on and start switching. Before that, the inductor current is zero. Over some number of periods, I gradually ramp the inductor current up until way out here, I've now reached steady state where for the nth period, IL of NTS is equal to IL of N plus 1 TS or n sub integer, so how many this is, my eighth period looks exactly like my seventh period. Okay. This section is in some transient. As the converter starts up, all of the analysis we just did still applies. These two equivalent circuits in each subinterval are still the same, and I still have the same expressions for my slope, even when I'm in the transient. Just the difference is the value of this output voltage. If I plotted that as I start up, my output voltage starts from zero, stays at zero initially, then ramps up and eventually reaches its steady state value. Okay. So here, my slope VG minus V is very steep because V is zero. Here my slope minus V over L is almost flat because V is still very small. As I begin increasing the inductor current, it starts supplying charge to the output voltage increases, and these slopes begin to balance out until I reach my steady state condition. That'll happen out here when V is equal to dVG as we solved. I'll be in steady state. The amount of ramping up I do equal to the amount of ramping down, and every period is the same. Okay. So, in this course, we're going to start by analyzing here. Okay? We're going to assume the converter is in steady state. We want to analyze the operation of it once we're there. Not until about a third of the way through the course that we'll return to transient operation and talk about what the dynamics are, how to solve this waveform as it starts up. To begin, we're just going to ignore this, analyze once we reach steady state. Okay. And ideally, this should be the most important thing. The converter should almost always be in steady state. Starts up once, maybe has some transient if the load changes or if the input voltage changes some. It should be relatively fast transients, and then it goes right back to its steady state operation regulating the output voltage. Okay. nearly out of time. So what we're going to talk about next is this principle of volt-sec balance, which is something that applies in steady state and is derived from this argument we just made. Okay. So in steady state, IL of NTS is equal to IL of N plus 1 TS. Taking the inductor current that I just drew, what does that tell us? Something that time aligned with the voltage here, ramps up, ramps down. And I previously wrote these as IL of 0 and IL of TS. But if I'm out in the nth period, it'd be IL of NTS, IL of N plus 1 TS. I'm going to keep my old notation and just say I define time axis so that 0 is the beginning of this period. This is DTS. This is TS. So that is, I'm redefining this as T is equal to 0. I'm out here in steady state. I don't know this current, but I know the slopes. And I know that it has to start and end at the same value for me to be in steady state. These two things are the same. So if this is true, then however much I go up in this first interval, I have to come back down in the second interval for these two to be equal, so that I hit the same value. Okay. So I'm going to label these. The amount that I went up here, I'm going to call it 2 delta IL. The reason I call it 2 instead of just delta IL has to do with how we define ripple current in the inductor, which we'll look at next. Okay. But for now, I'm just saying delta IL is half of this distance. Okay. And if I'm in steady state, then the amount I come down during this interval has to also be equal to 2 delta IL, and it should be the negative of it. I go up 2 delta IL, I come down 2 delta IL. Okay. So solving these amounts, IL goes up in 1, 2 delta IL is equal to, well, it's going to be slope times time, right? Then the amount IL goes down in 2 minus 2 delta IL is equal to minus V over L times V prime TS. And to be in steady state, these two have to cancel each other out. So for steady state, what I'm going to have is VG minus V over L times DTS is equal to V over L times V prime TS. The amount I go up is the negative of the amount I come down. If I add these together, I get 0 net change in the inductor current. Simplifying, I can cancel the L and the TF. VG minus V times D is equal to V times D prime. I'm going to move the V terms over to the right. What we get is VG times D is equal to V times D plus D prime. D plus D prime is the percentage of the period I'm in position one plus the percentage of the period I'm in position two. If I add those two together, it's one the entire period. What I get is V is equal to DVG. This goes to one. Now, in a more formal way, I've solved out this output voltage. Generally, so the thing I like to do is to define M of D, my conversion ratio, is equal to V over VG, is equal to D in this case. V over VG is D for the buck converter. Okay. This is my result. Did that by applying volt second balance. We'll talk about the implications and ways to do this a little bit faster next time. Okay. Have a good weekend.